Morning. If you'll please turn in your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 3, and we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 7, and we've entitled the message, Wedlock versus Deadlock. Wedlock versus Deadlock. 1 Peter 3:1 says, "And in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. As they observe your chaste and respectful behavior, your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, and putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by fear. You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers will not be hindered." Some of you may have read my little bio there. My bride, my wife Debbie, went to be with the Lord last July 17th. So today is it's kind of a weird emotional day for me because on one hand, I miss her so deeply, but then on the other hand, I am so blessed to be here to speak to you about marriage. I am probably one of the most pro-marriage guys that there is, because God blessed me with two wonderful wives that were more spiritual than me, more loving than me, and I'm basically been transformed by the wives that God has given to me. The last time I spoke to my wife was on the 17th of July. It was 6:30 in the morning. She had went on to hospice about 18 hours earlier. That's the whole length of her hospice experience. And so we had her in a hospital bed. So at 6:30 in the morning, I stood by her bed and I said, "I love you." And she said back, "I love you." And then 5 hours and 20 minutes later, she entered into heaven. So I'll tell you, today I miss her so deeply. It just seems like there isn't an hour or two that goes by that I don't see how wonderful she is and how she has made my life so wonderful. So I miss her, but at the same time, I am so blessed to be here today. I had someone about a year ago that came in my office and they started out by complaining about their wives, and I stopped them at that point and I said, "You know, you're talking to the wrong pastor. You know, you want to talk about how bad your wife is. What you need to find out is what you can do to fix this thing. I'm just not the guy to do that, because I am pro-marriage. I'm also pro-women's ministry. Let me tell you why. I know that sounds weird, but I'm pro-women's ministry. It's because both of my wives were so committed to women's ministry that I reaped the benefits of women's ministry. So women's ministry is sort of like my little baby ministry. That's the thing that I'm involved in. I have my hand to the pulse of the women's ministry because it is such a blessing, and it produces really a godly wife and a better marriage. Well, this morning I have some difficult material to cover this morning, and you talk about material that's in your face. I'm reminded of that song from Mary Poppins. It's a spoonful of sugar that helps the medicine go down. You know that one? Let's change it a little bit. A spoonful of humor helps the biblical truth go down, okay? So it's kind of rough singing it that way, but it has a point. So this morning, I want to read something to you. I have found this rather amusing. It's humorous, but it really does show us the great chasm of differences that Tim has spoken about in the marriage relationship. I think most of us have heard the rules of the feminine side. Now you get to hear the guy's view. And these are men's rules, and they're all numbered number one, because of their purpose. Okay, so check this out. Number one, learn to work the toilet seat. You're a big girl. If it's up, put it down. Number one, birthdays, Valentine's, and anniversaries are not quests to see if we can find the perfect present yet again. Number one, shopping is not a sport. No, we're never going to think of it that way. Number one, when we have to go somewhere, absolutely anything you wear is fine, really. Number one, crying is blackmail. Number one, ask what you want. Let's be clear on this one. Subtle hints do not work. Strong hints do not work. Obvious hints do not work. Just say it. Number one, we don't remember dates. So mark birthdays, anniversaries on a calendar and remind us frequently beforehand. Number one, most guys own three pairs of shoes, tops. What makes you think that we would be any good at choosing which pair out of 30 would look best with your dress? Number one, yes and no are perfectly acceptable answers to almost every question. Number one, come to us with a problem only if you want help solving it. That's what we do. Sympathy is what your girlfriends are for. Number one, a headache that lasts 17 months is a problem. See a doctor. Number one, anything we said 6 months ago is inadmissible in an argument. In fact, all comments made are become null and void after 7 days. Number one, if something we said can be interpreted two ways, and one of the ways makes you sad or angry, we meant the other. Number one, you can either ask us to do something or tell us how you want it done, not both. If you really know best how to do it yourself. Number one, Christopher Columbus did not need directions, and neither do we. Number one, the relationship is never going to be like it was the first 2 months we were going out. Get over it and quit whining to your girlfriends. Okay. Number one, all men see only 16 colors like Windows default settings. Peach, for example, is a fruit, not a color. Pumpkin is also a fruit. We have no idea what mauve is. Number one, we are not mind readers. We never will be. Our lack of mind reading ability is not proof of how little we care about you. Number one, if we ask what is wrong and you say nothing, we will act like nothing's wrong. We know you're lying, but it's just not worth the hassle. So we can see there's a great chasm this morning between that of husbands and wives and men and women. But you know what's amazing is Americans love marriage. You know, 96% of Americans will get married. They all want a storybook sort of lifestyle where they live happily ever after. But when you look at the stats, they don't really work out that way. Do you know the first marriages are 50% chance of divorce on the first marriage? The second marriage is 67% chance of divorce, and third marriages are 74% chance of divorce. You see, the problem's not with marriage. Many believe it's the problem is marriage. It's not. And so many are opting out to live together, thinking that marriage is the problem. The problem is attempting to live happily ever after without God and His directives. That's actually what the problem is. It's not marriage itself. Well, the theme of 1 Peter is a living God gives a living hope. The passage that we're looking at, chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, is taken from a section starting in chapter 2, verse 11, through chapter 3, verse 12, that is dealing with God's grace and submission. So in this section, he is giving various groups and speaking to them about the need of God's grace and the need of us to submit to God's grace. First of all, he speaks about it personally, that every believer is to depend upon God's grace and they are to submit to it. Then he speaks about citizens need to do so. Then he speaks about employees submitting. And now he speaks about marriage. The last one that he'll speak about is in the church fellowship. So the purpose of 1 Peter is to offer hope and encouragement to Christians that are suffering. Now, why does he say this? Because Peter recognizes that in marriage, there can be suffering. There can be difficulties in the marriage relationship. So Peter is unique in that he's an apostle of the Lord, but he's a married apostle of the Lord. Now that's good to kind of keep that in mind. It's, some people often kind of snub their noses to the fact that Paul was possibly not married and he's speaking on marriage. Well, here, Peter is a married apostle of the Lord. You know, the gospel contains two parts, the believing part and the behaving part. And so what Peter does is Peter unites those. He weaves those together in these seven verses. Now, as we look at these seven verses, I want to note that six of the verses are addressed to the wives, but only one verse is directed towards the husbands. But don't let that kid you. That seventh verse is jam-packed. It has lots and lots of things and information and truths that God wants to impart to us. Now, here's the thought of our passage. I always like to give a thought to the passage that is before us. And the thought is this: marriage consists of an imperfect husband and wife that are dependent upon a perfect, all-powerful God. So each one of us are imperfect, but God is perfect. And at the same time, he's all-powerful. So here's how I want to break it down this morning. Verses 1 through 6 contains three truths that every wife should know. Three things that every wife should know, should be burned in her heart. And then when we get to verse 7, we'll talk about five truths that every husband should know. So let's look here, starting at verses 1 and 2, and let's look at the first truth. Wives, your behavior matters. How you act really, really matters. Your behavior is really everything to the wife within the confines of marriage itself. So let's look at verse 1. It says, "And in the same way you wives," or "likewise you wives." Now, when he says in the same way what? Well, if you go back to chapter 2, verses 21 through 25, Peter has just presented Jesus Christ as the great example of submission. He speaks about submission, but he uses Jesus as the model of submission. That Jesus was the suffering servant without complaint. Jesus never fell into retaliation, never did so, but he trusted his heavenly Father. Now, that's a good point to start with in marriage. That we are to look to Jesus in our marriage. So, in verse 1, "In the same way you wives remember Jesus." If you drop down to verse 7, he says the same thing to the husbands. "You husbands, in the same way, are you husbands likewise, you need to remember Jesus." So he says, "In the same way, you wives be submissive." You know that word submissive is a Greek military term, which simply means to arrange in rank or to arrange beneath or to arrange in order. Now, marriage is not military, by the way. Let me just kind of let the cat out of the bag. It's not a military institution at all. So within marriage, it's voluntarily giving in. It's voluntarily fitting into the place that God has called us to be. So it's voluntary. No one can make any of us submit. That has to come from our heart. That has to come from us. We have to be willing to realign ourselves with the Lord. And so it's not implying, as Tim said, that women are inferior. It's referring to the order, the God-appointed order. It's kind of like knives. You know, there's a steak knife and there's a butter knife. If you're eating steak, don't use a butter knife. I mean, I've had steaks I needed a bandsaw or a table saw to cut the thing. I mean, it was so bad. But I mean, you would not use a butter knife to cut a steak, you'd use a steak knife. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to a place where you're having a meal and so forth, and you don't have a butter knife, and you wind up using a steak knife. And sometimes these steak knives are so wussy looking, you know, they're just real thin. And trying to butter a piece of bread with a steak knife can be quite a challenge. Now, they're equally knives, but Each one of these knives has a specific purpose for which they were created or made. It tells us in Ephesians 5:21, and be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. So all believers are called to be submissive. We're all called to be subject. It's not simply addressing the wives. Husbands submit to their wives by loving them. Fathers submit to their children by not exasperating them. Children submit by obeying their parents. Employees submit to their bosses by being submissive to their tasks. And bosses submit by not putting burdens on the employees that are unreasonable. You see, every single one of us are called to be subject. We're called to be placed in a specific order. Notice it says, to your own husbands. I would underline that in my Bible, your own husbands. Somehow we have this mindset in some places within our society that all women are to submit to all men. That's not what he's saying here. He's saying here to your own husband, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, this word disobedient literally means not allowing oneself to be persuaded or non-persuadable. So it could be referring to an unequally yoked relationship where the wife is married to a non-believer. Or the wife is married to a husband that's not walking with the Lord. He's being disobedient to the Lord. He's backsliding. We're not really sure, but it's a spouse that's not being persuaded. It's a spouse that is not following the Lord. That's the relationship that Peter is describing here. Notice he even uses the word, if any of them. So it's without exception. Any of them are not persuadable. If any of them are not following the Lord, they may be won, or they may be acquired, or you may be able to gain them. There could be conversion. There could be obedience without a word. Do you know that people are rarely won to Christ through talk or argument, but through prayer, influence, and holy living? People aren't won to Christ through screaming at them. They just aren't. You can't persuade someone by yelling at them or using a persuasive argument. Rarely are people brought to God or they're brought to submission or brought to obedience by scolding them, by lecturing them, and by yelling at them. So really, wives that are pouting, sulking, scheming, bargaining, nagging, preaching, coercing, and humiliating, and there could be a few more, but doing all of those things reveals that they are trusting in themselves, not in the Lord. They're not aligning themselves with God. They're attempting to fix the problem their way. They're resorting to the flesh. They're resorting to worldly techniques in order to do so. Wives, your job is to submit to your husband and allow God to change him. I know you don't like to hear that, but it's almost like we're taking applications for fourth person of the Trinity. That's what we're doing. We think we're going to help God out. So I'm going to browbeat my husband. I'm going to lecture my husband in order to, he might see the errors of his way and he might be persuaded. Again, wives praying out loud in the next room, oh God, save my heathen husband, you know, in the next room. These things in and of themselves are not going to be the driving force for change in a marriage that is suffering. Listen to this, how the New Living Translation, this is 1 Peter 3:1. It says, in the same way you wives must accept the authority of your husbands, then even if some refuse to obey the good news, your godly lives will speak to them without any words. They will be won over. So that's how you do it. It's through your behavior. Look at verse 2. As they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Notice, as they observe. It literally means to look at intently or to stare at. You know, people are constantly watching us. And I've seen this over and over again. I've gone through various times in my life, difficult things, and it's always quite amazing when someone will make the statement, you know, Pastor, so many years back when you were going through this, you know, I was watching you. And you know what? It encouraged me that, you know what? I could do this too. So we're being watched. Your husband that's not where he should be, he's watching. If you have children, they're watching. If you got grandchildren, they're watching. You got neighbors, they're watching. As they, but it mentions the husband observes. So the husband is the key one that's observing, but there are others that are also watching. It says to look intently at or to stare at, they'll see it. I love what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 3:3, being manifested that you are a letter of Christ, cared for by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. We're being watched. We're being observed. Notice the husband observes the chaste behavior. The word chaste means pure. It means clean. It means innocent. So the actions are genuine actions. The wife is genuinely submitting from her heart to the Lord. She's genuinely going through the motions because she desires to do so. She wants to be pleasing to the Lord. Notice as the husband observes respectful behavior. And this is reverential obedience unto the Lord. So it's the attitude and the actions coming together is what it is. You know, the husband, oh, honey, can you please make me a ham sandwich? Well, here's your ham sandwich, pig. Good actions, bad attitude. You don't want to do that. Here's the spaghetti. Wear it. Whoops, you know. And, you know, the actions of making it for him, but then baptizing him, and it doesn't go together. It doesn't work. And what Peter is saying, it's got to be real. It's got to be genuine is what it needs to be. So it's actions and attitudes is what he's referring to. That's what we're concerned about. So what a wife can say could be 100% biblical, but it's 100% wrong. 100% biblical, but 100% wrong. Because she's preaching and she's telling him. When God says you need to be behaving, you need to act it out, you need to live it out, is what you need to do. I love this definition. It was put out years ago by Churches Alive. Submission, allowing God to lead me through others. Submission, allowing God to lead me through others. That is one of the most beautiful definitions of submission. It's simply submitting to God and allowing God to have his way by using other people. That's what it is. And that's God's wonderful plan. This brings us to number two. In verses 3 and 4, wives be beautiful on the inside. Wives be beautiful on the inside. It says, your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, and putting on dresses. Now, this word adornment is the Greek word cosmos, by which we get our English word cosmetic. It means to place in order, or to place in harmony, which is the opposite of chaos, by the way. That's what it is. Not merely external. Now, merely is in italics that tells us it was not originally there, but was placed there by the translators to give sense. And the sense is here is that our focus really is to be the internal. There's nothing wrong with addressing the external, but the main focus of a godly woman is the internal. One said it this way, a pretty face may capture a man's attention, but only a beautiful spirit will hold him. That's what will hold him. Beauty on the inside. One that loves the Lord. That's what captivates a man. You may get his attention, but you can't hold him. It's that inward beauty that is absolutely precious to the Lord. You know, it's interesting. This is 2,000 years old, a little over 2,000 years old, what we are looking at. And 2,000 years ago, it was a big problem. Boy, things don't change much, do they? We've got our magazines, we've got our commercials, and I feel so sorry for some of you ladies. I mean, you're supposed to weigh 90 pounds, and in the IE, you may end up in Orange County when the Santa Anas come. I mean, you're like gone. And they have all of these standards of the world that are just unbelievable, that are laid upon women as to their outward adornment, as what they're to look like on the outside. He mentions here braiding the hair, or literally knots, or interweaving, or intertwining. And Roman women would spend the better part of a morning weaving their hair. They would weave strands of silver and gold into their hair, and it would take the better part of a morning to actually do so. And then he mentions wearing or putting around gold jewelry. They would actually, in some cases, put crowns. They would wear crowns on their heads. And then there was the wearing of silver and gold. And then he adds putting on dresses, which means to wrap around. Paul goes on to speaking to Timothy about this in 1 Timothy 2:9 and 10. He says, likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly, discreetly, not braiding the hair, gold, pearls, or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as befits women making a claim to godliness. Of course, there's all sorts of different ideas and interpretations on this today, and there, of course, there's some, you know, you got Pentecostals that believe it's wrong for a woman to, you know, to cut their hair. They go on to say women should not wear jewelry, they should not wear cosmetics. I find it often rather amusing. You can't wear jewelry, but a watch is a timepiece. Isn't that interesting? So with this 8,000 Longines watch, Ivy Wet, we won't give her a diamond ring, but we'll give her a diamond wristwatch because it's a timepiece. I remember J. Vernon McGee was once asked the question, Dr. McGee, do you think a woman should wear makeup? And he says, if the barn needs painting, paint it. That's what he said. Now, that's not my view. I'm just repeating what he said. Now, Peter's not saying you can't. Your adornment must not be merely external. You see, the focus of a God-fearing Christian wife should not be the externals. You can still do your nails and everything else. I remember one night we were having dinner, and one of the ladies we were with, she leaned over and was messing with the candle, and her fingernail caught on fire. I go, that's fake. That's what that is. So there's nothing wrong with that. You can have the nails, you can do the hair. And it's like one wife said to her husband one time, she said, honey, will you love me when my hair is gray? He goes, I've loved you through 8 different colors already. So I don't think gray is an issue at this point. I remember one lady had her hair done, and she loved it so much she realized it was actually the real color of her hair. You know, it's like, so there's nothing wrong with these things in and of themselves, but if that is the focus, that's a problem. That's a big, big problem. So Peter says in verse 4, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. So it's this inner beauty, which I find really interesting, that you know that inner beauty is accessible to every single woman on this planet? Your outward appearance, you have no control over that. That's given to you by God. And what you have is what you have. That's just it. But you realize that as a woman, you can be absolutely stunning and beautiful on the inside. Do you know that that's accessible to you as a Christian woman, that you can be beautiful on the inside? You can be striking. It's accessible to every single woman. Listen to this, Proverbs 11:22. You talk about in your face. As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. It's a great verse. The godly wife's focus with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit. What does it mean to have a gentle and quiet spirit? It's the disposition of a spirit in which one accepts God's dealings with us as good, therefore without disputing are resisting. You see, the godly woman realizes that where I'm at is where I'm supposed to be. The person I'm married to is the one I'm supposed to be married to. It may not have been God's will when we got married, but once we got married, it became God's will. So I'm in God's will right now, and I'm not going to resist it. I'm not going to complain about it. I am going to serve God and love God where he's placed me. That's basically what it is. It's not trying to get out of the marriage. It's not trying to get out of the relationship. It's not trying to change that person, because you're submitting and allowing God to do that through your actions and the Lord's grace. But it is trusting in the Lord for the situation that I'm in. May not like it, but we don't walk around saying how much I hate my life. I hate this. I hate this. I hate that. We're not to do that. Because a gentle and quiet spirit says, I accept where God has placed me. I accept the situation that I'm in. And my faith and trust is in him, which is precious in the sight of God. You know why it is? Because it's so rare. It's so rare. To find a person that is completely satisfied and completely trusting in the Lord is a beautiful, rare, rare quality. It was precious 2,000 years ago, and I think it's even more precious today. This brings us to the third truth that every wife should know in verses 5 and 6. Wives must place their hope in God. Their hope is to be in God. That's where the hope needs to be. He goes on to say, for in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. So when he says in this way, referring to their behavior, referring to their beauty, referring to their gentle and quiet spirit, he says, this is the way it was. This was the way of the godly women of the past. This is the way it was. And this, by the way, is the believing part. We talked about the believing part and the behaving part. This is the believing part. In former times, the holy women. I love that word holy, and it's such a wonderful word. It just simply means to be whole. I mean, who doesn't want to be a whole person? And I did singles for a number of years, and some singles look at themselves as half of an Oreo. I don't get that. Half an Oreo. What is that? I mean, holiness just simply means wholeness. Have you ever met anybody walking around saying, I don't want to be a whole person, I don't want to be a whole person? You know, that's what we are all longing to be. So these are the whole persons of old. Those that were wholly given to God, those that were complete. And then he uses the word hope. I love that word hope. Hope is such a wonderful word in the New Testament. Hope is a sure expectation of a future event. It's so sure, it just hasn't happened yet. So it's like, I hope tomorrow is Father's Day. I hope tomorrow is Sunday. And I hope after Sunday is Monday. That's the hope that the Bible gives to us when we're trusting in him and we're looking to him. It's a sure expectation of a future event. It just hasn't happened yet. So that's the hope. That's the assurance that the godly wife can have. And it says they used to adorn themselves. I think one of the couples that is called to mind on this that really modeled this was Abigail and Nabal in 1 Samuel. Her husband's name was Nabal. You know what the word Nabal means? Fool. Can you imagine introducing your husband? This is the fool. That's his name. Well, you talk about a gracious, gracious, God-fearing woman was Abigail. Delightful is what she was. And now she hoped in the Lord. Esther, they hoped in the Lord. Verse 6 says, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. So Sarah obeyed Abraham. She listened and then she obeyed. The believing part and the behaving part. And Sarah respected Abraham, calling him Lord. This happened in Genesis chapter 18, verse 12. Now, when she uses the word Lord, it could be translated Sir, Mr., or Master, but I'm sure your husband would prefer Lord. I think it probably sounds, let's be more accurate, you know. Let's do that. So it's really an issue of respect is what it is. She absolutely was submissive to him. She was respectful to him is what she was. And this is recorded in Genesis chapter 12, verses 10 through 20. And then again in chapter 20, verses 1 through 13. The context of this is that Abraham, the father of faith, was always not walking in faith. He had lapses of faith. And in Genesis chapter 12, verse 13, Abraham told Pharaoh that Sarah was his sister. I don't know how many of you wives would like that, but that's what he did. And then he did it a second time to another heathen king named Abimelech in Genesis chapter 20, verse 2. Can you imagine lying about your wife two different times? I mean, that was absolutely wrong. It was wrong all the way through. But again, notice Sarah's response, that she was submitting to the Lord. She was going to allow God to correct him. She was going to allow God to deal with him. And that's exactly what she did. And the Bible says, and you have become her children. We become daughters of Sarah when we submit. If you do what is right, without being frightened by any fear. 1 John 4:18 says, there's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. So the Bible for the wife contains two parts in the gospel message, the believing part and the behaving part. I'm sure every wife here has things in her husband she'd love to see change. Well, let me tell you the way to change him. You submit. You realign yourself with the Lord. Let your actions speak volumes. Focus on the inward part of you. Become beautiful on the inside. Make sure that your hope is in the Lord. That's where our hope needs to be. When I hear people saying, I'm hoping in the government, I'm going, that's a bad move. It's a really bad move. You want to hope in the Lord. It's a sure expectation of a future event. I can see we're out of time, so we won't cover the husbands at this time, but next year, if you'd like to hear that part, I'd love to come and share it with you. Verse 7, you husbands in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker. Since she is a woman, show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers will not be hindered. There are five truths in this one verse that Peter speaks to the husbands about how to take a marriage that's suffering and to make it one of unity. And so the first one, number one, is husbands need to be committed to their wives. Tim spoke about this in the last session, the need to be committed to their spouse. You husbands likewise, again, he said, wives likewise, husbands likewise. Jesus is the model of submission. Jesus did not retaliate. He entrusted himself to the Father. So in like manner, husbands are to follow the example of Jesus, and they are to live with your wife. This word live means to dwell, or to make togetherness, or to settle down, or to be at home, or to dwell together. Genesis 2:24, for this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And as Tim mentioned, marriage involves severance. The man is to leave his father and his mother. There's to be a cut. Now, that doesn't mean you never talk to the in-laws and outlaws again. Doesn't mean that. It'd be wonderful if we could say you never have to talk to your mother-in-law again. I would be like in heaven right now if that was the case. But that's not what he's saying here. He's talking about making a cut, making a break. Then he speaks of permanence. They shall cleave to their wife. It means to glue or to melt together. And then unity. They shall become one flesh. A study a number of years ago revealed that the average couple speaks 37 minutes as a couple a week. 37 minutes in communication in a week. And I'm sure the husband, honey, will talk during halftime. Or we'll talk during the commercials. Which I think is rather sad because, again, Genesis 2:18 says, it's not good for man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. The very purpose of marriage is companionship. So for the men to make togetherness, to make a commitment to your wife is everything. That's what marriage is. It's the very purpose that marriage was created, is to be together, is to make togetherness, to be committed to your wife, committed to your husband. That's what marriage is all about. I've actually had couples tell me, this is amazing, you know, Pastor, we've been married for 40 years and we have never, ever taken a vacation apart from my children. I thought, how weird that you would confess your sins to me. That is so weird. You know, our children now are 30, and we've never had a vacation as a husband and wife alone. Again, life begins when the children grow up, move out, and the dog dies. That's when life begins. But to have this mindset that we don't vacation apart from the kids, that is tragic. Where's the commitment? Where's the oneness in the marriage relationship? Number two, husbands exercise intelligent leadership. Live with your wives in an understanding way. Now, I find it interesting. I would underline this in my Bible. Peter is strongly suggesting that it's possible to understand your wife. I know most of us don't believe that, but that's what Peter's saying. Now, Peter's not saying it's easy. He's not saying it's not a challenge. But Peter does say that we're to live with our wives in an understanding way. And what does that mean? Intelligent recognition of the marriage relationship. The differences of the marriage relationship. The moods, the goals, the fears, the hopes, the needs. I read an article a while ago, and I just want to just hit the highlights. When I first read this article, I thought it was, this is stupid. I read this article. And the article says, we do not teach men to be men. Therefore, many men grow up and get married who are nothing more than grown-up little boys, still looking for mothers rather than wives. They want someone to meet their physical needs, to keep them well-fed, happy, soothe their egos when they get hurt. I'm here to tell you that's true, by the way. I'm here to tell you that. As a pastor, that's been my experience. That many men, I think, when they're looking for a wife, are really looking for another mother is what they're looking for. And I say this because there's no intelligent leadership. It's almost like mom's there to soothe me, to cook for me, to do this for me, to boost me up when I'm down. And that's not what marriage is all about. Marriage calls for the man to be an intelligent leader, to be a spiritual leader. And it's getting harder and harder to find that today. It's become very, very difficult. The husband's responsibility is to exercise intelligent leadership. As Tim made mention, that one statistic that was given out a number of years ago, that the average woman speaks 20,000 words a day and a man 7,000, and when the man gets home, there's 19,000 words to go. I added that part, but that could be. The husband is the priest, the protector, and the provider. It doesn't matter if the wife wants to be the priest. The wife doesn't choose where the family fellowships and attends church. That's not what the wife does. That's not what she's supposed to do. The wife doesn't set the spiritual direction of the home. The husband does. The husband's the one that gives the directives, and Proverbs makes it clear that the wife then carries them out. That's intelligent leadership. That's what we're to do. As couples, we always say little things to each other. You know, is we'll look back over the years, we see the same thing over and over again. One of the things I used to say to my wife, this is my second marriage. You know, my first marriage was wonderful, but I realized I needed to change. I said, God, if you'll give me a second wife, I'm going to do better. I'm going to be a better husband. I even want to be better. And so I would constantly say to my wife, Debbie, I'm going to be a better husband. You know, I want to be a good husband. You know, this was always my thing. And she would always write back and say, you are a good husband. Well, it was a couple years ago, I told her, I said, hey, let's go out for dinner. And I put down there, I'm trying to be a good husband. But when she typed it out on her iPhone, it corrected it and says, you're a good has-been. So all of a sudden, my phone lights up again. She goes, I am so sorry. I did not say that. And I said, no, the damage is done. It's already done. It's over. But we should be aspiring men, not has-beens, but to be good husbands, to be intelligent leaders. We really should. We don't need a mother. We need to take care of our wives is what we need to do. This brings us to number three. Husbands, choose to love your wife. As with someone weaker, since she is a woman, show her honor. Now, weaker is not as strong is what he's describing here. It's delicate, since she is a woman. Now, again, this is not saying that women are inferior. That's not in the thought of Peter here again. It would be like China versus Corel. I mean, you could equally use them at various settings, but they have a particular purpose for them. So the wife is more delicate is what she is. And she's not inferior. You hear men all go, oh, you know, of course, the Bible calls her the weaker vessel. You know, they always do that one, you know. But the husband cannot treat his wife the same way he treats his friends. He just can't do that. Husbands have to change in the way that they speak to their wives. They can't treat her like one of the buddies at work. You just can't do it. You know, for instance, I use the illustration that, you know, your wife makes a very special meal, and so you're sitting down at the table, and so, you know, you start to eat the corn, and you notice the corn is cold. You know, if you tell your wife the corn is cold, do you know what you just said? You just said the meal was a disaster. That's what you said. You said, no, I didn't. All I said was the corn was cold. No, what you said was it was a disaster. So over the years, I like corn that has ice in it. It's actually refreshing during the summer. Try it sometime. You see, our wives will remember what we said, and they'll even remember the color socks we had on when we said it. You can't treat your wife like you do your friends. I've come to the conclusion, and this is deep, this is worth writing down, that men are not women and women are not men. There's a stupid saying that was out a few years ago that, you know, I got to get in touch with my feminine side. My feminine side was taken out in Genesis 2:21. And that feminine side was made to create a woman. It's gone. It's absolutely gone. And it's so weird in our culture, as Tim was talking about, how we're trying to say there's no difference in the sexes, and now there's a million different sexes. Now, that is really true, what he's saying. And this thing where women attempt to make men feminine, and then when they turn them into pansies, they don't like them. That is so weird. They want to be the priest, they want to be the protector, they want to be the provider, and they beat their husbands down. I'm the one that makes the paycheck. Going on and on and on, trying to beat them down to make them like a woman, and then when they end up like a woman, I don't like you. I don't like a woman, you know. And it's just weird. It's because we're not following God's design. Notice it says, show her honor, assign to her, apportion to her, dispense to her. So a husband is to exercise deliberate love towards his wife. I find it interesting in Ephesians 5:28 that Paul tells husbands three times to love their wife. To love their wife as they would their own body. And by the way, it's not a feeling, it's a choice. It's a choice to love your wife. It's not a feeling.
husbands that don't open the door for their wives, you know. Honey, unload the car. I'm watching a football game. Be quiet as I watch it, you know. One husband says, well, I'm going to start being, bring back chivalry to our marriage. I'm going to start opening the door for my wife. But make sure she's in before you shut the door, buddy. Yeah, I mean, that's not how you do it. Number four, husbands, share your life with your wife as a fellow heir of the grace of life. Our co-share would be a great way to define it. Co-sharing of the grace of life. You're joint heirs. You're on the same team. Husbands must recognize the wife's right to share every part of their thinking and of their whole life. It's really interesting that I've had husbands come in and say, what's going on? My wife is always spying on me. Like I'm in the garage and there's a crack and there's these eyes looking at me while I'm in the garage. Why is my wife always spying on me? Because she's called to be your helper. She wants to be let into your life. Now, when it says that they're heirs, they're partners, it doesn't mean that the wife has to play tackle football with the husband. That doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that if he's out boar hunting, she needs to crawl on her belly to kill a pig. She doesn't have to do that. But she needs to be let in on her husband's life. What's going on inside? What he's thinking? What he wants to do? What he sees taking place? That a wife has this desire to be that helper. That's that curiosity that wives have. You know, you're talking on the phone, your wife's leaning up against the wall trying to hear what you're saying. Wives, you're going to love this right now. I am giving you permission to spy on your husband. I'm giving you permission right now. And I believe it's biblical. You have biblical standings to spy on your husband. You are called to be his helper. And for a husband to say, my wife is spying on me, really is a revealer, because what that tells me, he's not letting her in on his life. He's not doing that. He's not including her. And she's attempting to find out. She's attempting to get in. Anything that's taking the place of her is in the way. And she's trying to find out what it is, a fellow heir of the grace of life. Again, Genesis 2:18, it's not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. That's God's purpose, companionship. If you don't let her in, she can't fulfill her part. And this brings us to our fifth and final truth. Neglecting your wife severs communication with God. This is really a hard one here. It literally severs our relationship with God. We're not loving our wife. We're not directing. We're not including her in. What we're literally doing is we are severing communication with God. Notice it says, so that your prayers will not be hindered. This is a warning. I really believe that that's what this is. Prayer for the believer is demonstration of our dependence upon the Lord. That's what it is. And when our marriages grow dull, when our marriages seem to have lost their luster, we need to ask ourselves, husbands, have I been loving my wife? Have I been directing my wife? Have I been cherishing my wife? Have I been doing those things? Because there's a good possibility that I've cut off communication from the Lord, and now it's showing up in my marriage. He says, so that your prayers may not be hindered, or literally cut down. It's the idea of cutting up a road. That's literally what's happened. We've cut up the road that leads us to the Lord. It's been cut up. I'm going to close this morning with looking at those principles as we close this morning. For the wife, the marriage will change through your behavior, not your words. Wives, outward beauty is important, but inward beauty is precious to God. Wives, a genuine faith is revealed when we are submissive. Husbands, be committed to your wife, severance and permanence. Husbands, exercise intelligent leadership. You're the priest, the protector, and the provider. And husbands, exercise deliberate love towards your wife. It's a choice, not a feeling. Husbands, share your life without limits with your wife. That means open up. And lastly, husbands, neglecting your wife means severance with God. We serve God with our spouse. It's impossible to serve God apart from your spouse. Let's pray.